This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
City centennial events are usually intended to be celebratory, to make residents feel good about themselves. Romanticized history is the favorite dish at a centenary bash. But bringing skeletons out of the closet is very, very unwelcome on such occasions. Kelowna is celebrating its centennial this year, and for the occasion it commissioned 7 video artists to create their vision for their centenary, undoubtedly hoping for the usual fare. But one of the video artists, Jay Saloom, decided to open the closet door, and at the sight of the rattling skeletons the Kelowna Council took fright. Jay Saloom's video, titled Terra Incognita, presents native peoples telling their experience of the last 100 years of colonization. Jay Saloom was born and raised in Kelowna and has become world recognized for his video creations. He joins me from his home in the downtown East Side. Good morning, Jace.
Good morning, Peter. Nice to be on the radio with you.
Likewise. So now, did the Kelowna Council know the subject of your video before it was completed?
Yeah, they were fully aware. With the contract that was signed with the Alternator Gallery, and the gallery we signed a contract with the artist, there was a full description of all the projects that were going to be made and also a description of the temporal transmissions, the whole 7 videotape compilation that won the competition for the centennial.
So were there other artists involved in the process from the city's point of view?
Well, there were 7 artists that were commissioned. There was 2 senior artists, Dana Claxton and myself, that were invited to produce a piece by the Alternator Gallery. They were the gallery that won the competition, the public art competition for the centennial. And then there was 5 emerging artists that submitted proposals that were chosen from submissions. So there were 7 artists altogether that were making pieces, and so there was 5. There was actually 6 pieces that were 5 minutes, and mine that was longer was about 30 minutes long.
What was the content of the other pieces?
They varied. Dana Claxton, who's also a local Vancouver artist, First Nations background, made a very nice sort of lyrical piece using archival footage, NFB footage mostly, of old regatta parades. And it was very subtle, but there was a sort of a panorama of faces of who was recognized and who wasn't, you know, along the parade routes and things like this. And then there was a piece about the Chinese community and the old Chinatown that used to exist in Kelowna and some of the history and labor issues there. And there was a more fun piece about post office, working in the post office. There was a piece about Yoga Pogo, and then there was one that was about homes and the idea of home, and it was very beautiful, of different facades from the homes in the Okanagan.
Now, how did they respond when your video, along with the other 6, were to be premiered on May the 4th in Kelowna at the Rotary Center for the Arts?
Well, I didn't hear about anything about it. We were going to until the day before. We were going to premiere the tapes, and there was a big deal made because it was the week of the centennial launch, and that was supposed to happen on May 4th, on Wednesday. So May 3rd, which is a Tuesday afternoon, I got a call from the gallery going, well, the city was just here, and they've canceled the screening, and they want, you know, changes to be made in your tape. So I was quite taken aback by that because I didn't expect that reaction. I thought there might be some discussion, and you know, the tape might raise lots of good points for debate and for things to be discussed. But I didn't expect they were going to try to suppress the whole project. So what we did was I asked the gallery, well, can we go ahead and do an alternative screening? Because there's people coming from up and down the Okanagan and from other parts of the province for to see this this launch, these premiere of these 7 tapes. And then, so I arranged with the gallery that we could do a screening. We did a screening at the same time that it was originally scheduled and just went ahead without the city. And we actually booked the original theater that was going to be in because the city had canceled their booking that afternoon, so we moved right in. And it turned out to be quite an amazing evening full of discussion and support and a lot of really amazing sort of coming together of communities. About half the people there were from the First Nations communities up and down the valley, mostly from the West Bank for First Nation, but also from the South Okanagan and the North Okanagan. And then we had First Nations speakers before the event and the welcoming song of the Sealift Nation, which is the Okanagan Nation. And it's something that's very rarely done in Kelowna on the east side of the lake. So it was an incredible event. And then the day after the screening, the city, you know, went ahead and issued a press release saying, "Oh yes, we've given permission to the alternator to do a screening." So all the way along, the city's been trying to suppress, you know, the whole project, and at the same time changing its tune whenever it's gotten too much feedback.
So did they give any reasons when they were originally complaining?
The original complaint was that it wasn't celebratory enough, and that my piece in specific they were talking about was too like sensitive and too difficult for them to deal with. Basically, they never ever said specifically which parts of the tape they wanted to cut, because by the time that point came around, they had already changed their tune, from celebratory to saying it was one of lack of balance or one of technical reasons due to the contract and issues of releases and, you know, fact checking and things like that.
So where does this dispute now stand with the city?
Well, there was a barrage of emails, like about 200 emails came from across the country in support and trying to make the city aware of how important it is to embrace First Nations history than trying to keep denying it as part of the official history of Kelowna. And then there was lots of newspaper articles in the local press and some in the provincial press about taking sides, you know, with the city or taking sides with the issues of the tapes. And freedom of expression, and also sort of like, you know, just like I mentioned before, the need for acknowledgement. And so what happened was, after all that barrage of press, the city decided, well, they wanted to negotiate with the gallery. And the city issued, you know, sort of subtle threats to the gallery about withdrawing their funding, or about, because the gallery itself, the alternator gallery, is reliant on the city's funding. It's one of their major funders. So in the last 3 weeks, the city and the alternator gallery have been in negotiations to try to make a new contract, because the city is appearing that they're going to break the old contract and not accept the project. And then they're going to write a new contract and dump the project all into the gallery, it looks like, and the gallery is going to take over the distribution of the project on their very, very limited resources. It's a very small, non-profit alternative gallery.
Hmm. What was the main aim of your video?
Well, you know, when I was invited to make a piece as part of the centennial, I asked them right away what were the other, you know, topics being dealt with, and nobody was dealing directly with First Nations history. So whenever I'm, you know, asked to make something, or whenever I perceive a need to make something, it's always looking at, you know, what voices aren't being recognized. And it was, you know, very obvious in when you're doing a centennial in a colony of that was once somebody else's land, that you should look at the history of the people that you've, you know, suppressed, or the people whose voices aren't being heard. So that's what I chose to do. Because when I grew up in Kelowna, it was basically, and still is to a large part, an apartheid state. You got the First Nations community living on the West Bank side, the west side of the lake, and you got the predominantly non-native community, predominantly European ancestry, but others as well now, after immigration, living on the east side of the lake. And in business and in work, there's a lot of mixtures, of course, but in reality, there's a racism that First Nations people have to face every day of their lives in Kelowna. It doesn't matter what level or what strata that they live on, whether they're professionals or whether, you know, they're working in a nonprofit sector, or whether they're students or what have you. So for me, it was a way to go back to the valley, back to Kelowna, and sort of investigate a side of the culture, a side of the area that I never really had a chance to when I was growing up there.
You paint an extraordinary picture. Like, I think the reference was to a decimation of 98% of the First Nations population, and that's very, very strong information.
Yes, the tape is, you know, I sort of see it as just skimming the surface, as if you're, you know, throwing a rock across the lake and it's skipping along, because it had to be, couldn't be any longer than half an hour, and so I could, you know, the history requires, you know, volumes and volumes, of course, that have been written on it. But if you're going to do a TV show, you need like about, you know, a 10-week series just to touch upon all the issues. So what I did was sort of use it as sort of a primer, you know, for discussion. So I was interviewing people, First Nations people in the valley, and mostly in Kelowna, about going using snippets of these conversations and weaving them together to talk about the history. So the way I viewed the tape overall was that I wanted to have people talk about pre-contact, what like was life for the First Nations people before contact with Europeans, what happened at contact, and then with the reservation systems and the residential schools, the legacies of contact and the legacies of those paradigms that were produced of pain, basically, how those legacies ensue in the culture today and in the contemporary society. So there is people talking about contact. And part of that contact was the diseases that were brought over by the Europeans. And not only were there, incidental diseases that were brought over, there was smallpox that was brought over and used as a biological weapon in the destruction of the First Nations communities. And through all these diseases and other forms of annihilation, there was 98% of the First Nations community in the Okanagan that was basically destroyed. And through that process, one of the former chiefs that I talked to on the tape, Chief Dan Wilson from the Okanagan Nation, he explains that it was because of the decimation of the population that the British were able to have their way and make unilateral decisions, as far as the residential schools, as far as creating the First Nations people as wards of the state and acting unilaterally to take all the territory that they wanted and shoving them into the least desirable territories.
Now, you mentioned one of the people you talked to. Could you say who were the people that tell the story in the video?
Yeah, there's 7 or 8 main people that are featured that I keep coming back to, and Dan Wilson is one of them. He's a former chief of the Okanagan Indian Band. And he's one of the main historians who recounts all the history. He's very knowledgeable about the whole history. And then there's Roxanne Lindley, who's like the local anthropologist for the West Bank First Nations, and her family, and that includes her mother, Elizabeth Lindley Charters, who is an elder in the West Bank First Nations, that recounts, a lot of the stories about the residential schools and how the reservations were marked out originally, and then chopped back 4 or 5 times during the process of colonization. And then there's Edna Terbaskett, who's the director of the Kelowna Aboriginal Friendship Center, and she actually ends the tape. She's the woman that ends the tape on a really sort of fascinating note, talking about sharing and caring and sort of offering the hand out of the First Nations to the rest of the community, saying, we're here to help. If you need help, we're here to share.
I was very impressed by the transition to the young rap artist into his production.
Yeah, that's Will Swite, and he's a local rapper from the West Bank First Nations. He's also rapped with his cousins down in Penticton. Some dear listeners may be familiar with Seventh Generation. That's also part of his family. And yeah, he talks about the story of his father and his mother, this is part of the legacies of contact, where his father was in residential school, ended up becoming alcoholic and committed suicide, and his mother also was affected by the whole system and was also had problems with alcohol. And so in his song he incorporates a lot of the pain and the difficulties of living through those trials and tribulations and how to survive. A lot for me, the tape is completely celebratory in a way. So the city, I don't see how they can say it's not celebratory enough. It's not sugar coated, but it's celebrating the survival of the First Nations community in Kelowna and in the Okanagan. 500 years of attempted genocide. Celebrating this culture, this sort of phoenix rising from the ashes, and it's these amazing voices of the people of the tape that need to be heard in the context of a centennial where the only First Nations representation is singing and dancing and a few crafts display, which is typical of a colonial government.
Now, your family came to Kelowna as immigrants from the Middle East. When you grew up and were going to school there, what contact did you have with Native people?
Very little, next to none. The only if somebody was First Nations in school, they wouldn't admit it. It was a liability, it wasn't an asset, according, because of all the tension and even our family. We were one of the first Arab families to immigrate to the valley, and we felt a lot of racism as well. So our parents were very careful not to teach us Arabic, you know, to make us assimilate. Assimilation was sort of the name of the game at that time. Nowadays, people are much stronger about and much more able to retain their culture and retain their heritage because it's become more of an acceptance in the general overall European, you know, community, of white community of Canada. So yeah, I had no contact basically. You'd see the odd disadvantaged, you know, urban native next to the liquor store that was, you know, trying to survive, you know, the pain that they were going through, and that was about it. You know, in the West Bank, all you knew was sort of like, you know, rumors and myths of what was happening over in the First Nations community.
Well, thanks very much for telling me about the video. It's fascinating to watch and certainly should be part of those centennial celebrations.
Thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it. I will be showing the video at some point in Vancouver. It's called Terra Incognita. I'm not sure where it's going to be yet. I'm still.
If you get in contact with us, we'll announce it for you for sure.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Take care.
I've been speaking with Jay Saloom, internationally recognized for his video art, his video Terra Incognita. It can be viewed on the internet at the moment. If you give us a call at 604-684-7561, we'll give you the URL. It's a bit long to read over the air.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.